Welcome to the Media Bolt Podcast, where we talk all things content creation. So whether you're making stuff with your phone or you're shooting on a big budget cinema camera, we aim to provide you with practical knowledge for the next time you press record. On today's episode, we've got someone that I would call a really close friend, a mentor, an exquisite content creator, a hustler, an ambassador of many things, and just somebody that is just extremely dope and gets the game, gets the content game, Mr. Martin Moore.
That is the best intro, the most kind intro I think I've ever received on a podcast. Thank you very much.
Hey,
did you rehearse that?
I did it just then, man. I used to freestyle rap.
Very kind. So, yeah. I appreciate it.
That's what I really think of you, so it's just true.
That means a lot. We've known each other 5-6 years, maybe longer than that.
I know the day I met you. I remember it vividly. It was the COS headphone gaming headphone event.
At, what was that gaming lounge that was on like Wisconsin? Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it was called.
I don't know.
You're right, though. That's where we met.
I knew about you before then, and I knew you were going to be there, and I was excited to meet
you. That's when I first started at COS back in 2017.
Yeah.
That was like the first like big project that I was a part of, was like launching those headphones.
Yeah. It was dope. You gave me a pair, and then my wife won a pair, so I had two, and I shared one with my brother-in-law, so he's got some.
You were married then?
She was my girlfriend.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I remember that.
We've been through a lot. A lot of times. Well, today, man, like, your story is very cool, man, and it's one of those, to me, that just stands out, because you're somebody that had a goal, you achieved the goal, and you're living your dream now, you know, and you're in the midst of that. And you talk a lot about that, and early on in meeting you, you exude that, and it gave me confidence to do what I'm doing today. So I just want to talk a little bit about your beginnings, where you found a camera, and then we're going to move forward a little bit and just talk about what you do with that camera, because I think your approach to making content is very different from a lot of people.
It's unique.
It's unique. And you know, we talk about it, like, so many people worry so much about what the external people think of them, and you don't give a damn.
Mm-mm.
And it really bodes well and helps you to be the person that you are.
Sure.
And it's just really, it's really interesting to hear. So let's start about, why did you get a camera? A little bit about your backstory, and we'll zoom past into the meat of it.
Sure. So I started shooting film photography in high school. I took a photography class. It was really cool, but I was into music at the time, so like I was playing in bands and stuff, and I kind of didn't do anything with it. But the first time I really picked up a camera and sort of like something clicked was the first trip that me and my wife Janet ever went on, and that was to Las Vegas. And I got this little, can we swear on this podcast or no?
Yes, send
this it. Little shitty like Kodak 3.3 megapixel point and shoot. Yeah. And I got it for the vacation. And as soon as we were up in the air, I was taking pictures of the mountains as we were flying over the desert. And then when we landed, I just like flipped it and I started like recording us. And I made like this little vacation video. And then I made another vacation video and another vacation video. And I just sort of started really enjoying like telling stories with a camera. I've always been two things, an entertainer and a storyteller. So like when I was 7, I started doing magic. I was a magician. Not like your uncle's shitty magic at Thanksgiving, like the real deal, floating people. And
you,
I was like on TV and all that kind of stuff. And then after that, music, playing in bands and entertaining people on stage. And then obviously my YouTube channel and a lot of like the short documentaries and commercials and stuff and videos I've made. And so I've always been, since I was born and I can remember, entertaining people and telling stories. And so when I finally picked that camera up for like the first time and started recording myself and like just like cutting video together and coming up with like an end story, like something clicked in my head and I was like, this might be my next thing. This might be my next thing, because music ain't cutting it. Magic obviously didn't work. And like it really made me feel alive in a way that few things haven't.
Mm. At what point did that passion and fun actually turn into currency and a living for you?
It really wasn't that long. So I started off doing photography first, shooting like weddings, which I never wanted to do. Like weddings were just a means to like up my gear game.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like, yeah, do a wedding, get paid $3,000-$4,000, and then I can get a new lens or I can upgrade my body. What I always wanted to do was like commercial work, commercial photography, commercial film, commercials, if that's even a phrase. And so the summer of 2014 or 15. I can't remember what it was. I had like no weddings to shoot. I had like no photography jobs, and I was just in this like rut, creative rut. And I was like, fuck, what am I going to do? And so like I was on YouTube and I found like some beauty vlogger at like in the dorms at UWM that was like on YouTube, just sitting in front of her iMac, like doing like beauty vlogs. Mm. And I was like, this is when like vlogging was in its infancy. Almost nobody was doing it. And so like, I just like hopped on YouTube and I was like, Milwaukee vloggers, like there was nothing. And I was like, huh, I want to try doing that.
Yeah.
So I grabbed my camera. Actually, it was my phone, my iPhone. Oh God, what would have been back then? Like an iPhone 6 or something like that, maybe. Yeah. Went down to Bradford Beach and just started like filming random people, being like, what do you like about Milwaukee? And just like, I naturally just sort of told a story in like the 3 or 4 minutes. And then I made another one the day after that and another one the day after that. And then I just kept doing that every single day, every single week, every single month, no break. I'd make a video every day, whether I wanted to or not, whether I was sick or not, whether I had anything interesting to say or not, whether I had time or not. There were so many times where I'd work till 9 p.m. at Honda and I'd have to go downtown and figure out how to make a video and cut it and then upload it to YouTube, like so I could go to bed, you know, and wake up the next day.
What year was this?
It's 2014 or 2015. I can't remember.
So almost 10 years later, you're still doing the same.
And so that thing, that was really the beginning. And that's when brands started catching on. It was probably only really about 30 or 40 vlogs in where I started collabing and doing things where I would either get paid or I would get an experience. So I would do stuff with, you know, Milwaukee Kayak or the Safe House. There was a yoga company and companies just started noticing my YouTube channel because it was very easy to stand out. And then I started getting photography work from that. I started getting like commercial film work from that. And so that's really how I got started in it.
Yeah, and at that point, was it still like the thing you did on the side after
yes.
work?
Okay. It wasn't until 2017 when Koss found me. Koss found me in 2016 on a YouTube video that had like 56 views. Nice. And that was really the beginning of where I got to now. They became a client of mine. And then 2017, they hired me full time. So it was just a side hustle for 5 years or so, maybe.
And you did a video that got 56 views.
That's how Koss found me.
And your dream job came from.
And then they asked if I would, they had a new Bluetooth headphone coming out and said, would you be able to do a commercial for us? And I was like, yes. But in the back of my head, I was like, yeah, I've never made a commercial before. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Like, I think that's a testament to, you know, part of what we're going to talk about in a little bit is put the content out.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you didn't do the daily thing or you weren't putting as much stuff out, Koss might not have seen.
No. They can't, if it ain't out there, they can't find you.
They can't.
And you never know if you're going to score your first gig or your biggest gig on your first view or your millionth view. It could be one of those or anything in between. You just never know. And so so many people and creators and filmmakers and photographers are so pent up on views. And, you know, it honestly really doesn't matter. Just put it out there.
Yeah.
Every piece of content you put out there is going to be an opportunity and another opportunity. And I always say it's like the Titanic. This is a bad analogy, but the Titanic sinking. And let's say you're a filmmaker or creator and the shore is like your end goal. Like that's where you want to get to. And in between that boat sinking and the shore, there's all these little lifeboats. And, you know, you're swimming from lifeboat to try and get to the shore. And there's 10,000 other people that are treading for their life next to you that would gladly take that seat in that boat. So get in that boat, take that opportunity, put that piece of content out there because it's just going to get you one step closer to the shore.
I don't know if you remember this conversation, but one day you told me that you've got to put things out every day.
Yes.
You got to put projects out because it's going to help you. You don't want to ever like leave anything kind of to...
100%.
You know what I'm trying to say?
You want me to expand on that?
I want you to expand on that because I'm not hitting it.
Putting out content every day does two things. One, the repetition. You just get so good and so efficient at editing, at just compressing the timeline of whiteboarding, recording, editing, and then, you know, putting it out on the internet. You just get really quick and efficient at it. Like, think if you made a video like once every 6 months, like how long that takes you to like edit. And then you got to remember like what you got to do for SEO to upload it and share it. And you get so quick and efficient, it becomes like breathing. I mean, I could cut a 10 minute vlog, which 10 minute video doesn't sound like it's a lot, but it's, as you guys know, it, like it's a lot. I could cut a 10 minute vlog. I think once I did it in like 13 or 14 minutes. You just completely go blank. It's like playing, you play music.
Yeah.
It's like playing piano or guitar. You know, you're like, God, I can't remember this song. And then you just like close your eyes, shut your brain off. And then all of a sudden your fingers start doing the work. That's what it's like when you're cutting video. You just move the mouse around all the keystrokes and you can just be like chop, 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 chop.
Dude, that's a magical feeling right there. Huh? That's like being in the zone when you're in the
100%. And so you only get that off of repetition.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is it's really creating videos and stories, in my opinion, that are like really compelling, is like, that's easy for me. Like, it's not that hard to come up with like a really good creative idea when it's once a month or once every couple months.
Yeah.
Where you really start to dive deep into your storytelling abilities is when you run out of ideas and you're like, I don't know, I've fucking exhausted every idea. And then now a client comes to you and goes, I need you to make a movie or a video or a documentary about something. And then you got to dig real deep and try. And that's why I always say I can make a trip to the grocery store entertaining on Instagram or YouTube. You know, I've made videos pumping gas, going to the gas station, or, you know, going to a bar, someone making a brandy old fashioned. You can make anything entertaining as long as it's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. And you have good editing skills. And so that repetition and making the content every day and putting it out there, you get efficient at editing, and then you get really good at figuring out how to tell stories.
What's the ingredients to a good story? You said the beginning, middle, and end.
Yep. That's
When you're in a pinch, is that like,
that's it?
What am I doing today? And then you kind of decide those things before? Is that it?
I just always, I don't know, as soon as like I'm like, oh, something's going to be interesting, I just record. I don't know. That's why you always see my Instagram stories. You always see like, if there's a Martin Moore posted a, you know, 23 fucking clip long Instagram story, like I usually do, it always starts with my feet. Like I don't have any proof, but I swear to God, I started that when I was on Snapchat. I swear I started the whole recording your feet thing and panning up. But like, that's the beginning. Oh, where is he? Oh, he's downtown. Where is he going? And then grabbing the handle and walking in and so I don't know. For me, it's as simple as beginning, middle, and end. That's it. That's all you need to tell a compelling story.
Yeah.
If you can nail those three things, it really doesn't matter what it's about, what your budget is, how much CGI you got in it, what you're editing on.
Got to connect.
Yeah.
Got to connect.
And so that's always just been sort of my mantra as far as making anything.
Yeah. You told me one time you want to stay top of mind because you never know when someone's going to be needing your services or needing you.
Yes. I think I do remember you telling that. Always be in the back of their head.
In their back of the head. So you told me to flood the market constantly. Because one day that client's going to be like, we need this guy. And your algorithm will be helping you out at that moment.
It's not even so much the algorithm. It's everybody that fucks with your content and that knows you. And so, you know, there's some local business that needs a commercial. And, you know, Media Bolt Productions has been... They got their podcast, you know, they're taking selfies, they're doing Instagram stories. You guys are branding yourself out there. They don't even think twice. They don't have to go into the phone book. They just go Media Bolt Productions because they've heard of you, because you're always out there. Mm-hmm. It was the same thing with photography. Like, people needed a wedding. Martin Moore. Like, no one else was an option just because, like, that's just who I've heard of and I hear people talk about. And same thing with, you know, videos and stuff like that. And so just always be in the back of people's heads. That's how you get in front of people that are more talented than you, have more money than you, have a bigger business than you, or more hookups than you. Like, just outwork them and get in the back of everybody's head, and you'll be the first one that pops in their head and the first one they'll reach out to.
Yeah, that's an old school mindset too. 100%. Like these days, like, people are, they want that instant gratification. They want it to be perfect. They're overthinking comparison. Comparison is a thief of joy.
And, yes, it is.
And all of those type things. So you're like, nah, let's just flood the market. Lil Wayne used to say that. He was like, I'm just in the studio. I don't know what y'all are doing. I'm just working.
Look at artists that instead of putting out albums, they just put out singles or little small 3-4 track EPs, constantly flooding the market with content. You put out an album, people binge it for month or two, and then it's just on to the next thing. Taylor Swift's new album, or Posey's new album, or Lil Wayne's new album.
Well, that's
you just have a new
mixtape game. The people that were the mixtape artists were almost like, you know, content creators. They were making multiple mixtapes in between their albums. So now the listeners got they got too much to listen to. So you're giving the people what they want.
Exactly.
You're feeding that need.
And that applies. You can scale that to anything: music, art, film, puppeteering. Really, it really doesn't matter. Like, you just keep making content as often as you can and as much as you can and put it out there, and you'll get better, you'll get more efficient, and you'll always be in the back of everyone's minds.
Ready to go. For you, what amount of your content is scheduled, planned versus organic and like just done in the moment type stuff?
I mean, I would say virtually all of it is organic and in the moment, unless it's something like last year, or was it earlier this year? I was the Milwaukee Bucks ambassador. Mm-hmm. Ooh, boy, I don't even know if I can say that. I was the Milwaukee Bucks ambassador, and that was scheduled content that had to go through a bunch of, you know, legal and stuff like that. And then obviously everything that I make for costs is all premeditated, all the commercials and documentaries and stuff for that. But anything that I do on YouTube or Instagram, well, my YouTube channel is all like premeditated. Like, I had an idea of what I wanted to do, but Instagram stories and stuff is just like, that's just off the cuff.
That's awesome too, because I think people limit themselves when they're like, got out of a schedule, got to put this together, need to put out this much. I know I get sometimes in a bind, I'm like, we got to make more content. We took a couple days off. Then I just realized sometimes if you take the days off, just come back.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
People won't forget you.
Yeah, don't feel like you're playing catch up. Just get back on it. It's like going to the gym in a sense. Like,
yeah.
When you're consistent, but sometimes you get sick and fall off.
Mm-hmm.
Don't beat yourself up and don't go back to the gym. You know?
Right.
Just get back on the train.
100%. Up,
go again. So, yeah, I think that's something that I
try to make Instagram stories every day. Almost every single day I'll do one, probably, unless like I have nothing going on. Yeah. Like, I worked from home, had a big project, and then there's like a Bucks game at 6.
Yeah. Well, what would you tell someone? Because there's a lot of people in this seat. I used to be in this seat. You know, I'd say around the time I met you, I was this guy like, I'm interested in cameras. I don't know how to make money or to get where I want to go. I just have a vision.
Mm-hmm.
What would your advice be to somebody that's like, picking it up, just learning exposure triangle, just like maybe just bought their first light, trying to like, you know, do things a little bit better. What would your, you know, advice be to them?
I think you have to have an idea of what it is what it is you want to start off doing. Do you want to be a vlogger? Do you want to make documentaries? Do you want to start doing commercial work and maybe one day make commercials? Do you want to make feature films? You need to have some sort of general idea, because like what I do, I mean, I'm on two different ends of the spectrums. I make like commercials for like TV and shit like that. And then I make like garbage little Instagram stories, like, and there's no in between. And you really need to figure out what lane you want to be in. Do you want to be on the, like the more lo-fi phone sort of social media end, or do you want to be on the higher end, like what you guys do, somewhere in between, but have some sort of vision? Or otherwise, what you're going to end up doing for a long time is just like bouncing around. So I would say have some sort of idea of what it is you want to do. And that's a hard thing to do, because when you first pick up your first camera and you're young, you're influenced by so many things. There's so many creative people that are just like chirping in your ear and in front of your eyes that will sort of maybe like take you off track. You're like, oh, I want to be like him, or I want to be like her, or I want to do this or that. And it's easy to get kind of caught up in that. So I think having an idea of what it is you kind of, where you want to dabble in.
Yeah. It took, maybe it's maturity. Like, it took me a while to figure out, I want to shoot high end filmmaking type projects.
Yeah.
At the beginning, like,
but you've always sort of been in that realm in one way or another.
Yeah. But I love photography.
Yeah.
And I still, like, to this day, I don't like do photography nearly as much as I used to, but like that composition caught my eye.
Sure.
Things like that. And I think that's why I eventually found like, this is what I want to do. For you, like, do you still feel yourself developing? Are you like, this is my niche, is what I always want to do? Or do you kind of, because like, you've been in the game for a long time now.
Yeah.
You've been a creator for a very long time, done a lot of really dope things. Do you feel like, okay, what's the next iteration, or am I in my pocket and I'm just going to keep?
You know? So I had this thing called, have you ever heard of the term success hangover? Mm. Have you ever heard that before?
Define it for our audience.
A success hangover is basically like my goal. It's when you achieve basically like whatever goal or dream it was you were chasing. So I worked on cars for 20 years and I was miserable. And my goal was never to just be a YouTuber and have some side hustle. I wanted to do it full time for a living. It's what was going to complete me. And when I got my job at Koss and started doing really well, I hit this point where I was like, what next? And I was just in this rut because I was like, I'm doing what I love. I'm getting paid really well to do what I love. And for COVID obviously didn't help that. And for a few years, I was just sort of in this rut where I was like, fuck man, I don't know what I want to do next. Like I'm doing it. Like this was my end game. I caught my carrot. Like, mm-hmm. You know, I had that fishing pole and like the bait was at the end and like I snatched it. And so for me, my podcast is like,
nice.
It's been the next iteration of, like what's been fulfilling me, because it's just a totally different way of telling stories. It's a totally different skill set, talking to people and interviewing people. And that's really what's, started completing me lately.
Yeah. Shout your podcast out.
Said No One Ever Podcasts. It's a podcast about things you never knew you wanted to hear about.
Love that.
Justin's been on.
I've been on. I was a guest.
You were on for, God, what episode were you on for?
It was season one.
Right? It was season one. That's when Ian was on the show. The show. I can't remember what your episode was about. It was a good one though. I know that.
Yeah, I'm gonna go re-listen after the show. Yeah, man. I think that's cool. And it's for people out there trying to find like what their life is gonna be, how it's gonna be, you know, what their roadmap's gonna be. It is important to understand like that roadmap can change at a blink of an eye.
Totally.
Being malleable is really actually really important in the creative field because things are changing so much. Mm-hmm. Like I think you're a smart guy and understand like there's a lot of things coming. AI is coming.
Mm.
Things after that are coming.
AI is going to be big, especially for film.
Yeah. So understanding that and pivoting and being part of that movement instead of like, you know, I don't think we can be on IG stories for the rest of our life.
Because
at some point, there's going to be something else. So I think you've done a great job of that. You started YouTube, moved there. Now you're in the podcast space. I'm sure whatever's next, you'll be in the Vision Pro doing the...
like a lobster, just... I think another thing, too, that sort of gets lost in translation when it comes to, like, doing this for a living is there's people out there... There's two kinds of people out there. There's people that are pulling the slot machine lever, and the only reason they're pulling it is because they're waiting for that big payout. They're waiting to hit the jackpot. And then there's other people that just like sit there, sip their drink, and they just enjoy pulling the lever and being in the seat. Mm-hmm. That's Dids. That's you. That's me. You have to enjoy the day-to-day, everything that doesn't involve filmmaking or photography or content creation. You have to enjoy the emails and coming on podcasts, and you have to enjoy doing paperwork and, you know, all the stupid fake LLC meeting that you have to hold with yourself at the end of every year. All the little nuances that go into the day-to-day stuff, you have to enjoy that. And if you enjoy that and you're not worried that you're going to make it someday or like that's the end goal that you're chasing, then you're going to find success. But if you're just chasing that end goal, you're going to take shortcuts. Mm. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to miss opportunities. And so I think you got to really enjoy just the day to day, the pull on the slot machine lever and not what you're hoping is going to pop out in the little coin slot.
Man, you said the LLC thing and I remember like,
dude, isn't that the dumbest thing?
You remember
you get that little sheet that you got to like fill out and it's like, it's so dumb.
Remember we went to lunch and you helped me set up my...
I still have that document for anybody that ever wants to know how to start a business.
Yeah.
So when I started my photography business, it was almost impossible to figure out the order of what to do, how to do it. Like I knew I had to get a bank account, but like I didn't know how to set up like sales tax with the state. I didn't know how to set up an LLC. I didn't know what order to even do these things because you don't want to like open up you don't want to open up your sales tax account like under your name, and then all of a sudden your LLC's got like you know an EIN number, and not, you know you're like oh shit, now everything's mixed up.
Might be viral. Give us a quick list of what would do in your first steps to start a new business.
Oh boy, this is gonna be off the cuff of my head, but open your bank account. Then I believe it would be probably get your EIN, then your LLC, then through the state get your licenses set up for sales tax. And then after that, I think you can go nuts.
Go wild.
I'm pretty sure that's the order.
Maybe get a website after that and emails.
Yeah, you can do all that stuff whenever. Yeah. But
That's dope.
If anyone ever needs it, I have the document and like all the links to like, for like, if you have questions or anything like that, or like where you go to like fill out everything. Cause I couldn't even figure out like for my licenses, for my filmmaking photography license, where to even like get those. Like it's easy now cause everything's on Reddit and stuff. But this was back in like 2012 where like nobody was doing this shit and no one in Milwaukee was doing it. So it's not like I could ask anyone. Like I had to figure out how to do everything myself.
Yeah. That's awesome, dude. That's
so that's why I like helping other people. Cause
yeah, you helped me and I've had people come to me for the same questions now. And it's funny. I always think back to like, damn, I never knew how to do any of this.
Yeah.
I still am like,
it's like when you move out and you're like, okay, now I got to set up the phone bill and the electric bill. And you're like, I don't know how to do any of that shit. And you figure it all out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's scary when you're trying to like start an LLC or a business because you really don't want to mess that up. And then especially when you do taxes and figuring out what can you write off? Can I write off my gas mileage or this room in my house? And boy, I'm writing off a lot of gears. Like someone going to like, the Fed's going to come after me. And so, you know, that stuff's tricky. Boy, I don't even know why we're talking about that.
No, I think
I got off topic.
No, it's really important though, because I mean, how many people do this thing, make some money, and don't even realize they need to be set up properly
and
don't know how to and get afraid, and then they put it down and go do something else.
The biggest thing that I can't stand about this country in general when it comes to like starting your own business and entrepreneurship is like, okay, so for, I think it's like the state of Wisconsin, if you make over $999, like then you have to like collect sales tax. And so I think it's such a stupid rule because let's say you have, you're just starting in photography and all of a sudden some business wants to pay you $5,000 to make a video or something like that. And you can't take their money because you're not set up with the state to pay sales tax. And like, you know, you fill out a W-9, they have to turn that in to the state. So the state knows that this company paid you $5,000. But if you don't report that and you're not paying the sales tax on it, the state's going to come after you. And so there's this thing where it's like you have to make a decision. I had to make a decision very early on because when I was doing photography, I had 833 East, the building next to US Bank Tower, wanted to buy work from me. There was another one on Wisconsin Avenue. I made a big video for like when you walk into the lobby of like just like the building and stuff. I got a bunch of money for that. And I had to very early on, like start my LLC and file with the state so that I could take these jobs and take their money because you can't just run around the town filling out W-9s and not pay sales tax and income tax on it. And so that's the thing that pisses me off. And it's, I think it deters people from starting a business, whether it's a production studio or a bakery or that kind of stuff really pisses me off. There should be a higher ceiling for like what you can make when you're first starting out. Or
well, a lot of times it's just simply that, like a side thing. Like you're not trying to like go do all this extra work to just like fulfill this like little extra.
Like when I was working on cars and I was starting to make 10, 15, 20 grand a year doing weddings and commercial photography and like commercial work, film work. Like I wanted to do it for a living, but I didn't think that was going to be anytime soon in the horizon. So it's like, fuck man, this is just like a side hobby. This is a side hustle. And you're telling me I got to start an LLC and pay sales tax. It's scary and it deters people, you know, and people make mistakes. I know a lot of people, creators who have told me about jobs that they've taken. And I'm like, did you fill out a W-9? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. Do you have your stuff together? They're going to find you.
Or yeah, they will.
Yeah. That's stressful.
So that stuff's kind of scary when you're starting.
That's stressful.
Anyways.
Well, let's pivot a little bit into some stuff that you've been doing more recently. The Milwaukee Bucks Ambassador.
That was fun. Program. That was fun.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? I understand exactly why they came to you.
Sure.
Because you're a perfect person to kind of elevate the fan experience. But tell us a little bit about that and what you guys do there.
It's funny that they came to me because I've only been a Bucks fan for 6 years, like a soft 6 years. Hated basketball. First Bucks game I ever went to was with my brother-in-law back at the Bradley Center when you could get like front, like you get courtside seats for like a buck and a free hot dog. And I hated it. It was the worst experience of my life. I said, I'll never like basketball. And then all of a sudden like Pfizer Forum got built and like Giannis started getting good. And like the Packers were kind of going downhill. And I was like, man, I'm gonna give basketball another try. And the first couple seasons we were doing really well that I was into it. Then obviously the finals and we won. And I just started getting into it. And then the Bucks slid into my DMs last fall, I think. And they were like, hey, you want to be an ambassador? And I was like, boy, there's a lot of basketball fans in the city of Milwaukee, and I'm like the last person that you should like fucking pick. Like, I know what I know,
yeah,
but there's so much that I don't know. And I was like, I don't know, people are gonna think I'm an idiot, but I think the kind of people that they were looking for were people like me, new fans.
Mm.
Like, you don't want to advertise to people that are already going to buy tickets to the game, you know, or buy your product. You're trying to get new customers. And so that was sort of the approach that I brought when I would make my Instagram reels for them when I did it. And all of my Instagram reels, like, crushed it, like, yeah, exceeded expectations. I think all of mine combined were more than all of the other ambassadors collectively combined, like as far as views and engagement.
Yeah, they knew they had the right guy.
And it was just cool sort of telling stories as a casual fan versus like a diehard fan. And it made going to your first Milwaukee Bucks game a very tangible thing. People saw how easy it was to get into the Forum and how fun the games were. And you'd have to sit in the seat the whole time. They had the Pato bar up top that was kind of cool. You could go with your kids. You could go with your girlfriend or wife. And I made it a very relatable, tangible experience that the average person could kind of dabble in and be like, you know what, I'm gonna drop $45 and snag a ticket. And yeah, I think that's why they came to me. And I feel like I hopefully delivered on that.
Yeah.
But it was a cool experience. It was a really cool experience.
That's super dope. You got some other things popping off soon with that, right? Was that throughout the whole season?
Yeah, that's not this season. So I'm done. That was last season. They did ask me to do it again this season, but I said, give it to someone else that like needs the opportunity. Like, I don't need the opportunity. But now I just have my first Bucks Twitter meetup this Friday, which I'm very stoked.
That's really cool. Yeah, tell us about that. I guess when this comes out, that's what I've already happened.
Yeah, it'll already happen.
Yeah.
Just one of the cool things about social media is like, there's just so many cool people on there that you meet and talk to for years and years and years. Before we even started this episode, you guys were telling me all the people that, you know, you've kind of followed on social media and liked and eventually got them onto your podcast and then met them for the first time. Like, this is an opportunity to meet all these Bucks fans that I've been talking to for years on Twitter and go to a game together, nerd out. So we're going to get to Mecca at like 5 p.m. I'm going to do a little giveaway. We're going to hang out, and then we're all going to the game together. My season ticket holder got us like all like the same row, so we're going to sit together. Oh, so it's going to be dope. Awesome. It's going to be a completely new experience for me, and I'm super jacked dang, for that.
That's so cool. I love how you just like continue to do things. You're always like active. You're always changing, adding things to the bucket. Like, you're never just in the same space.
I'm not a complacent person.
No, definitely. And can you just talk about why that's important and what motivates you to like continue pushing and not get complacent and kind of fall into that I'm good mode?
This tattoo right here. You only live once, but if you do it right, once is enough. Mae West. She was an actress back in like the 20s and 30s. I live by this saying every single day. If I died tomorrow, I'd have no regrets, because I'll know that every day that I was alive, I took advantage of every friendship, every moment, every opportunity that was given to me, whether it was making a vlog or was coming on this podcast or sitting on my ass playing Starfield for 10 hours a day, whatever it was, every day has been intentional. And so that's sort of the mantra that like I live by. And like, I just don't like sitting there being complacent and just kind of twiddling my thumbs going, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. Never tomorrow. Always today. And that's just sort of how I've always been. It's probably my OCD.
Taking action, man.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And that's what's really guided me in everything I've done. That's why I've been so fearless in everything that like I've done.
You don't give yourself a chance to think yourself out of it.
No, which is, I love that you said that. That's what most people do. They scare themselves out of trying something new or doing something new. Or I hate being around people. Like, I can't stand being around people.
Which
I'm a huge introvert.
I can't believe that.
You're, I know,
like, one of the most extroverted people in my mind.
I go to meetups and I meet people and I go on podcasts. I'm on the radio and I do interviews and because, I don't know, I like living life and...
Yeah. So is that a learned thing to be able to succeed in those spaces with around people when you don't want to necessarily be around people?
Yeah, I think so. Because I get super nervous. I get super anxious. But I think it's only recently I've really gotten it under control, being on the radio and having the podcast and being able to hold conversations and interview people. It's made me much more comfortable being around like larger groups of people. Mm-hmm. It's one thing like if I'm around friends, but it's like networking events where there's people that I don't know and you have all those weird superficial conversations. That's where I get really comfortable. Or yeah. Summerfest.
Oh yeah.
You ain't gonna catch me at Summerfest.
Hey, we'll get you a ambassador over there.
Although I have one of the highest viewed YouTube videos for Summerfest because they kicked me out one year when I did the vlog. And then I had a friend who worked for Summerfest and like for years she bugged me to like, we'll invite you back. You can bring your camera in. And I kept saying no, 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 because I was so salty.
Yeah.
And then finally I caved and made a video for them. And it did really, really well.
Yeah, that's dope. That's dope. Let's go a little bit into costs.
Mm.
I remember you did a commercial with your iPhone.
Oh, yeah. I've shot a bunch of them.
Yeah, I think the first one you did that I remember.
iPhone 12.
I remember people were like, like,
it got picked up hard.
Nobody did that back then.
No,
it's like everything's shot on iPhone.
It got picked up by like 9to5 Mac, Apple Insider, I think The Verge. Like it got a ton of press.
So why'd you decide to do that at that point?
Because at the time I was like shooting with like my digital SLR on like a big gimbal. And it's a lot. Like I'm really like when I do filmmaking, I really like guerrilla filmmaking. I don't like being confined to a particular space or like my old 43-year-old knee hurts, so I don't want to get that low. And there was just something about having my phone on a tiny little gimbal and just being able, the freedom that
nimble
it gave
with
me.
The gimbal.
Right. It just gave me a freedom to tell the story exactly how I wanted to with no physical limitations because I had, you know, 20 pounds in my hand or I had something on my shoulders, which I know you guys know about. And like that gets frustrating. And that, there's a place for that. But I was like, man, what if I could shoot something on an iPhone and nobody knew? And no one knew. What was funny, I never had a single person that saw it. And I mean, it got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands, probably millions of views. There wasn't a single person that was like, oh, that looks like we're shot on an iPhone. It wasn't until the articles came out and then I hopped on Reddit. And everyone was like, oh, you can totally tell it was shot on an iPhone. I'm like, fuck you guys. You didn't know that. You only know that because they said it was shot on an iPhone.
That's sick.
But it was a dude dancing like downtown in the Third Ward. I shot the entire thing in 2 hours, edited it in 2 hours, and then it was already up on like streaming services and stuff and YouTube like later that day.
Bro, that's so sick. And
you know, when I edit my vlogs and I put them on YouTube, I don't rewatch the whole thing in its entirety.
You never see it again.
I edit it. And then once it's done editing it, I don't go, okay, it's done. Now let's watch it all the way through and like QC it. I just export it and upload it. So there's always, you'll always find like, I don't do that with like coursework, but yeah. If you go on my YouTube channel, there's always shit. There'll be like an error. There'll be like a weird
black frames.
Yeah. Somewhere. Like a Brad Pitt. Have you ever seen the, what movie is that where he inserts the flame, the dick frame, Fight Club.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the movie theater. There'll always be some weird, like just blank frame or there'll be like text missing or a word spelled wrong.
But that's like part of your,
isn't that weird?
That's part of your magic though. I think like, honestly.
I never watch it all the way through. I've never watched a single vlog. I'll watch it after, but before I'll edit it, export it, and I'll never actually just like QC the whole thing.
But you don't overthink it because you know how important it is to move on to your next thing.
That's probably because when I was started off with the vlog, I didn't have time to sit there and get halfway through it and then rewatch the first 5 minutes and then go back and forth and back and forth. I just had to edit and
dude,
you know,
this podcast,
isn't that weird?
This is the antithesis of what a lot of filmmakers strive
for. My perfection. Advice would not be very good advice for 95% of filmmakers.
But you know what? We're moving into another world. Obviously, social media and content and just all of this stuff that we're doing nowadays, there's got to be an element of that in what you're doing to be successful on platforms.
Yeah.
Because, you know, working on a project for 6 months, putting it out and it getting minimal engagement hurts sometimes.
It does, especially if you see like some influencer on like that, like a brand or something, you know, hired off of Amazon that like filmed some portrait fucking video that was like a reel that's got 1.2 million views. Like that's frustrating as someone who has to do actual real like commercial work. Yeah. Like it's got to be good. It's got to be color corrected. Yeah. Like it's got to look legit.
And that's why.
And then you see some little asshole with their phone, you know, and it just racking up views, racking up sales. And it's like.
And you kind of mentioned like loving the process. Mm. And I think for me, I love the process of filmmaking, the nuances, the lighting, you know, working with C-stands and all that stuff. So no matter what the viewership is, I love that process of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. My favorite part of filmmaking is production day.
Yes.
Not uploading, not pre-production. It's like what it was like to be on set and the nuances of like that moment. So I feel like for me, that doesn't hurt my soul when I don't get a lot of views on things. Yeah. But I know a lot of people
are proud of what you made.
Yeah. And I know I put every ounce that I had into it. You know, our team or whatever, we put everything we had into whatever we're doing. So I'm good with that. I think a lot of people, they land so hard on the other side of it of like, we've got to hit our numbers. We got to get the amount of views. It's got to have the engagement. And you put all that time in and that shit hurts when it doesn't.
Totally.
But when you're like more focused on what it is, what you're making,
mm-hmm.
the moment, like you said before, no matter if you're like, I'm putting out a million pieces of content this year, I'm putting out five. If you're just focused on that actual momentum of it, man, it just, it doesn't matter.
If you're creating for the end goal of selling a product or selling a service or selling something like that, you're going to end up creating something that you don't, actually want to create. You're going to use clickbait. You know, you're going to do things that you know might get engagement or might not be like true to what it is that you want to do or what your vision is. And it's going to end up looking like every other commercial. It's when you do what you really want to do and you say, fuck the views, fuck the engagement, fuck the sales, like I'm going to make what I want to make. At some point that's going to pay off and it's going to work. It might not be like the first one or the fifth one, but at some point people are going to recognize that and it's going to pay off and people are going to see that creativeness for what it is.
Yeah, man. And that's when you create for yourself and for your heart.
Yeah.
I heard somebody the other day, they said,
never create for someone else ever under any circumstance.
I heard somebody was talking about, I don't make this for my fans. I make this for me.
Yes.
And my fans like who I am. Mm-hmm. So they like what that product becomes.
Absolutely.
And I thought that was awesome because we do live in a day and age where these big studios, they're making movies for what they think people want to see.
Yeah. Transformers 58 or fucking Fast and the Furious 13 or, you know, Star Wars episode 22.
But when people genuinely make something that they want.
Yeah. Have you seen The Creator?
Oh my God.
Bro.
So good, bro. So good.
That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, mm-hmm. Or District 9.
District 9. I love that movie too.
Super low budget. But just to such a unique story. You got people out here making 8 million Marvel movies a year and all these franchises just popping up. Ghostbusters is rebooted now. And it's just like, cool, like great. But like, where's all the people that like have something that they really want to say?
Yeah.
The Creator, man, when I watched that,
I love that.
That's one of the greatest films I've seen in the last 3-4 years.
It made me feel some type of way. And I had watched it. My wife was at work. She works night shift, so I was watching it by myself, and I was like, feeling like, it's like
I've never watched
tears
a movie
and everything,
paused it and rewound scenes like to just watch the cinematography and try and figure out how they did stuff, how and figure out why the story was so compelling. It was such a fascinating.
And do you know the story behind they shot it on a Sony FX3?
Yep, and did all the post stuff like they shot everything all on the super
camera,
low light, super
the camera
low light.
That's your camera you're looking at right there. That's the camera they used to make that movie.
Yep.
It's incredible.
And then just layered all the stuff on top of it.
And that's hope for everyone.
I think ILM did all the CGI and stuff
in that. So. Yeah, and that's, to me, that's hope for every filmmaker out here that this is possible.
Totally.
Like, no matter what your goal is, like, I've always, like, one day want to have something that's on Netflix and that level quality and do those type productions. Like it's possible, man, because this new age we're living in.
Totally.
And everything's available.
I still have I want to do a full length documentary. That's like my, another really big goal of mine that I'm going to do eventually, but I have to like not have a career to do that.
Is there a specific topic you like? I can tell you want to hold.
Oh, I've already, no, it's the sex lives of, the elderly in like nursing homes and our grandparents. So I'm going to, can I just indulge really quick?
Do it.
You know, we have this whole generation of people that are in their 80s and 90s who are human beings and they're in nursing homes or they might be in like a assisted living community. And these are people that still have wants and needs and they desire love and affection and touch and all the shit that they're still human beings that we have. But I think society looks at the elderly as they're just old. They're, you know, at the end years of their lives. I don't want to think about grandma having an orgasm and all this stuff, or kissing some new dude, having a new boyfriend. And it's like, no, this is a actual real thing that's happening. And like the STDs hot in the elderly community, like it's crazy because they don't know how to use condoms or anything like that. So anyways, I just feel like it would be a really fascinating documentary to follow like three or four like elderly people and just like them dating, their sex lives, and just sort of share that story and what that's like and make it a more sort of tangible, relatable world that we otherwise just sort of kind of brush to the side because it's icky and it's, I don't want to think about old people having sex and kissing. And I think it would just be just such a fascinating story. And I think there's a lot of emotion and tear-jerking moments that you could get out of telling a story like that. And so that's the documentary I want to make.
Do you see my face right now?
Huh?
That it's gonna work because it's.
Have you ever seen Love on the Spectrum on Netflix?
I have not.
So you have Netflix?
Yes,
of course you do. It's called Love on the Spectrum, and it's basically this. It's a series. It's short. It's only like 5 or 6 episodes, but they basically follow people with autism dating other people with autism, and it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know if you know anyone who's autistic, but like. You know, they're a lot of times, depending where they are on the spectrum, you know, they're sort of in their own little worlds and they have trouble communicating. And a lot of times we look at people like that as if like they're less than human, or, you know, they're not thinking about dating or sex or any of that. Yeah. And so anyways, they follow these couples and it's the most heartwarming stories. And some of these couples have been together or they get married. It's dude, treat yourself. That's Love beautiful. On the Spectrum. It's Love so good. Spectrum. And so that was sort of like, kind of validated my idea for doing the documentary on.
And I don't know, when you first said it, it was a little shocking.
Yeah.
It felt a little uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
but that makes for great viewing.
Totally.
It's not been done.
It hasn't been done.
It's something.
I've Googled it.
Yeah. I'd say go for it.
Yeah,
I think that's
I
what's
to.
Amazing about filmmaking is finding ideas that evoke some sort of emotion. You got the jaw drop for me just by pitching it. So
would you do you ever think about like doing a documentaries or anything, or is that not something you're
We've got our mini doc series Shocking Stories where we, you know, we had Ian Bennett on there.
Nice.
We had one of my former teammates. We just did an episode. He played for the Milwaukee Milkmen, but Michael Krause. So we've dove into documentary several different times.
I love documentaries.
Yeah, man. I love watching them.
Do you have a favorite by any chance?
Oh, dude, that's a hard one. I don't have a favorite that I can say right now because I can't think of all of them, but I am watching the Alexander the Great one right now. It just came out, and I'm loving that because I love history.
I was a big fan of the Netflix's Firefest one.
That one's good, yeah.
Dude.
The Firefest, that was wild. That was wild. Icarus was awesome too.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it was very good.
I love documentaries.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than a good documentary.
Hey, maybe that's the post-retirement Martin Moore life.
I hope so. I would love to do that.
Yeah.
It's such fun storytelling doing a documentary.
Where do you see yourself going? I guess if documentary is it, where, like in the next few years, as you continue to grow, what's next for Martin?
Definitely the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The podcast, and then I've really just been trying to help others achieve their dream and mentor anyone that I can, who I really believe in. Because, you know, like I said earlier in the show, I didn't have anyone. Like, I think Chase Jarvis was the only person. He's a photographer and filmmaker from Seattle. He was really like the first person that I saw on social media that I was like, damn, this dude's like a rock star. Like, you can be a photographer, filmmaker, and be, cause like I was always a magician and a musician. And like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I love that rock star, like being in the spotlight sort of thing. And I was like, who gives a shit that I'm a photographer? And I'm like, so people probably think I'm like some old overweight dude in a cummerbund shooting weddings. Like Chase Jarvis was like this, he was dope. Like he had 500,000 followers. And like, he was like posting stuff that had nothing to do with about photography. And I was like, man, like that's kind of cool. And I remember I reached out to him once on Twitter, and Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare, which is one of my clients back in the day, they asked me to do a photo shoot and video shoot for an autopsy class. And I was worried that if I didn't do it, they wouldn't want to continue using me.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't comfortable doing it for obvious reasons. And so I reached out to Chase Jarvis. I was like, dude, like, I don't know what to do. You know, this is really like my really only real, in air quotes, like, client. And I don't want to lose them by like saying I can't do the job or don't want to do it. And he just said, you know, do whatever you feel comfortable doing. If you don't want to be there, like, they're going to get crappy photos and crappy video and blah, 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 blah. And it was just nice to have someone to actually like bounce questions off and confide in. Yeah. And, that was the only person that I've ever been able to like reach out to and like get some sort of like feedback from. And so that's just what I want to do now going forward, is help other people. And it's been really cool. So I just had a dude, he's 22 years old. I was at a Pufferfish downtown, and this guy walks in. He's like, Martin Moore. And I was like, don't know who you are. I mean, I don't know who most people are. And he told me his name. He ended up being this kid that I had met in like 2016. He was like 14 or 15 years old, young filmmaker in, I think, middle school. And he got his film in the Milwaukee Film Fest, and I had narrated it for him. But I haven't seen this kid in 6-7 years. Well, he's 22 years old now. He walked into this bar. He's like a man. Back then, like, he was just like a young boy. And I was like, oh, what are you doing? And he's still in film. Like, that's what he's going to school for. That's what he's doing now. And like, he just told me how much he appreciated like me like doing that for him when he was a kid. And I was like, damn, this is why I like doing this stuff.
Dude, I can attest the same thing. Some of the things that you helped me with early in my career, and I'm just super thankful for you, because, you know, you were one of the people that helped me get going, helped give me the confidence, and help give me the stability business-wise to actually do this thing for real. And I'm forever grateful for you. And number one, very excited that you came and we got to sit down.
Hell yeah, man. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Yeah, this was
sick. I love you guys.
This was sick. For people that don't know you, I know everybody out there knows you, but where can they find you, your work, and just be able to
You just go on any social media, at Martin Moore Jr., or just put in Martin Moore and I'll pop up. For as long as the algorithm feeds it. Although I'm fading. It's really cool. Like, you had J-Man on the show. There's nothing I love more than like when I kick it with him. Like, we went to a Bucks game the other day and like other people notice him and not me first. I'm like, yes.
Yes.
All I've ever wanted, I've been waiting for like other people in this city to pop off and stand out. And like, because for like the longest time, I mean, it sounds dumb and it sounds pretentious, but for the longest time it was like me. Like, everywhere I went, people recognized me, and like, I don't know, I was Mr. Milwaukee. And
you're like the OG content creator from Milwaukee, huh?
But it's so cool now to see other people finally getting to cash in on their hard work. And I mean, you guys have been doing this a long time too. Like, the scene is way bigger now in this city than it was back when we all first started. And that makes my heart so warm to see that growth, to see you guys thrive, and to see J-Matt thrive, and to see DJ Shauna thrive, and to see everybody out there, you know, making a name for themselves and putting Milwaukee on the map. And like, I can finally like just step back and be like, I don't give a shit anymore. No one gonna recognize me.
The godfather of Milwaukee
content. It makes me very, very happy.
Well, man, with that, I guess that's what we're going to sign off.
I hope we had some bangers in there.
We got some bangers.
Sorry for swearing so much. I get very passionate about this stuff.
Hey, man, I just appreciate you, dude. So no matter where you're watching this podcast or listening to this podcast, do us a favor, hit the bell, subscribe, do all the things that helps that algorithm for us. And until next time, we're going to see you later. Peace.